You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hi, and welcome to a Times Higher Education ranking special podcast. I'm Sarah Custer, and joining me today is Phil Beatty, Editorial Director of Global Rankings, and Acting Rankings Editor Ellie Bothwell. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we've got our Times Higher Education Asia Rankings 2018, and I will save you all the suspense just a little bit longer before I announce the top 10 of those. First, I'd like to speak with you, Phil. This is the sixth year that we've done the Asia Rankings. What's different this year in terms of methodology or what we're looking at?
Well, the rare thing in rankings is that we've actually kept a lot of stability. It's the same methodology as last year. The only real difference is, as a result of much deeper and richer engagement with the global community, we have more universities in the ranking. So we're ranking not far off 400. We call them 350 plus. compared to 300 last year. So we get a deeper picture. We can see some more strength and depth. So it gives us a few additional insights compared to last year.
And we're actually giving placements to universities outside of the top 100 this year. Right?
That's right. Yep. We banned a lot of institutions in the lower ranks because the data gets very congested, and I think sometimes differentiation at that level is illegitimate. So we tend to ban in the world rankings. But as we focus in on a region, we're able to make more nuanced differences between the institutions. So there's more clarity and more transparency in terms of, you know, people being in a pecking order rather than being clustered into the bands that we've been doing in the world rankings. So we get a full top 200 list this year.
Great. And this year there are a few upsets in the rankings this year, right? So it's not a list that looks exactly like 2017's list. Coming in number 10 is the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. Number 9, we've got Seoul National University. 8, the University of Tokyo. 7, Chinese University of Hong Kong. 6, Nanyang Technological University. Starting at the top 5, number 5, Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. Number 4, University of Hong Kong. Number 3, Peking University. Number 2, for the first time, Tsinghua University. And topping the list again this year is National University of Singapore. Now, Ellie, you've done a pretty great analysis of the rankings this year, and you talk about Tsinghua University's performance this year, and a lot of that is based on their research. They're involved in the breakthrough with gravitational waves. Can you just walk us through what your analysis found in terms of why they've risen the rankings this year?
As you mentioned, sort of interesting thing is that Tsinghua is now sort of above Peking, and yeah, there were quite a few areas in terms of its research where it does better than Peking. So Tsinghua's got a much stronger publication output. It's also increased its research income at a faster rate than Peking. So overall, it gets a higher score for its research environment. And as you mentioned, you know, Tsinghua's been involved in some really sort of groundbreaking research. One of them is the sort of big research on gravitational waves. And then Tsinghua has also improved at a faster rate in other areas as well. So its citation impact has improved more, and its sort of international co-authorship. So the number of its researchers that work with international scholars abroad. But it is also important to note that part of the change is methodological as well. So Peking is still above Tsinghua in our world ranking. And the reason why the sort of results were different is because the metric weightings are different in our Asia ranking and in our world ranking. So in the Asia ranking, research productivity, research income, and industry income count for more, and reputation has less weight. And this reflects the fact that Asian universities sort of tend to be younger than their Western counterparts. They're sort of typically less well known.
And this is something, Phil, you're going to China to launch these rankings, and you'll be there for the Asia World Summit as well. And it's no coincidence that you're launching these rankings at SUS Tech, which is a university that's quite indicative of these strong industry partnerships that we're seeing in these Asian universities.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. SUS Tech isn't ranked in the ranking, which is quite a controversial issue. A lot of the Chinese partners were saying, why are you working there? But it's really a case of Shenzhen itself, which is where SUS Tech is based, is an extraordinary success story in terms of China's economic growth. It's, you know, known as Gadget City or the Chinese Silicon Valley. So it's a huge centre of technological innovation and research, and there's some fantastic clusters of outstanding universities there. And SusTech really epitomises the drive. It's not even part of the Chinese Excellence Initiative. It's only 7 years old, but it's already funded to extraordinary levels. It's got huge ambitions. Its research output is rocketing. We imagine it will be in the rankings probably next year because it's reaching our thresholds for research volume. So it epitomises the hunger and the desire and the reform zeal. You know, it teaches in English. It has levels of autonomy that a lot of universities in China don't enjoy. So it's a fantastic case study of very rapid progress, which I think does symbolise China's rapid progress in these rankings.
And China was the country with the second most institutions on our list, Japan topping that list. So another strong performance from Japan this year. Who else has been doing well, Ellie, in the rankings?
I mean, China, obviously, not just its top universities, which we've mentioned, but also the ones lower down have you know, a lot of them have risen. And that just, you know, reflects the huge investment, really, from the government. But and then Hong Kong as well, it's got three universities in the top 10 this year, which is, you know, more than any other country. It's done very well in its sort of research reputation, and its universities are incredibly international. But apart from those, Malaysia's done well. So the University of Malaya, which is its flagship university, is now in the top 50 for the first time. It was 59th, it's now 46th, and it's improved pretty much in all areas across the ranking. Indonesia is doing sort of well in terms of its representation. It had two institutions ranked last year, and now that's up to four. But there are, you know, quite a lot of countries that have more universities ranked, like India, Japan, as you mentioned, South Korea, but quite a few of those countries, their existing institutions are actually declining, or quite a few of them are declining. So I mean, part of that, I think, just reflects the fact that China has risen so rapidly, and there's kind of a bit more competition this year because we've expanded the table.
And you spoke to some stakeholders in Thailand, which is one of the countries that you were alluding to that hasn't performed as well. What did they have to say?
Yeah, so Thailand really is, you know, got an issue with the fact that it's got an ageing population, and it's also got a huge number of universities. So it's got this kind of oversupply of higher education. I mean, it's got the same number of universities ranked as last year, so 10 institutions, but I think seven of those have fallen down. And Taiwan has also got a similar situation in terms of, you know, this oversupply. I mean, some of the issues in Thailand that these kind of experts were talking to me about was the institutions tend to have quite a weak research environment. They're generally not getting sort of as much research income per staff as they used to be in compared to other countries. But there are also some more kind of fundamental changes, I think, that need to take place in terms of their kind of quality of teaching.
I think it's really frustrating, isn't it? Places like Thailand, they've lots of politicians have identified universities and excellent research as being their way out of what they call the middle income trap. You know, it's the way to get into the higher echelons in terms of economic strength. But for some, and there's a strong rising youth population, but then somehow they're not translating that into really clear policies around research excellence. There's not the investment there. It's similar with several Southeast Asian countries. I think it's quite frustrating that there's huge potential that's not always being fully realised.
I think it's quite interesting that these rankings are coming out at a time now when there were predictions in a story that you wrote, Ellie, about the slowdown in growth of internationally mobile students, mostly as a result of investments in higher education in these student-source countries. So, Phil, I'd like to pitch that to you. Do you think that's reflected in these rankings, or do you think we'll eventually see these institutions rise as globally mobile students start to stay home, I guess?
I think what's really interesting for me is that the reason we do an Asia ranking at all is because Asian universities are actually on the rise. It's a cliche, isn't it, that we're in the Asia century, that the balance of power is shifting east. I think it's absolutely true to a large extent. You know, certainly the huge youth populations in Southeast Asia, the massive investment that's taken place in China. You know, India now has its own version of an excellence initiative. It's okay, it's three decades behind China, but it's putting serious money and investment into trying to bolster the competitiveness of Indian universities. So I think there's clearly a sense that the capacity within Asia is improving and expanding. So certainly Asian students who perhaps, or the top Asian students who perhaps would have instinctively thought, I have to go west, I have to go to the US or UK or Europe, have much better options now. And I think China's the epitome of that. It's not just Tsinghua and Peking sitting there in as the sort of Oxbridge of Beijing. There's lots more coming up the ranks, making steady progress, and it's happening in other parts of Asia as well. So I think absolutely the competition for students, or the sense that the Western universities can sit back and assume lots of East Asian students are going to come pouring in, or Indian students are going to come pouring in, it's massively challenged now. And competition is much more global for talent.
You can find out more about the rankings and see the full results on timeshighereducation.com on our rankings tab, or going straight to the rankings website, www.thewur.com. And Ellie, as a final note, this is kind of kicking off our ranking season for 2018. What else can we look forward to coming up in terms of rankings from Times Higher Education this year?
Yes, we've got our emerging economies, sort of the next big rankings launch coming out in May. So that will include universities in the BRICS nations. Later that month, we've also got our reputation rankings, which is also quite an interesting one, just looking at, you know, how well institutions do from a kind of brand point of view. Our young university rankings are out in June. We've got Latin America in July. And then we're also sort of developing some new rankings around teaching excellence.
Great. All that coming up in 2018. Well, thanks very much for joining me today, guys.
Thank you.
You'll hear from us again for more Times Higher Education podcast ranking specials.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.